You ever wonder how dopamine works? We always hear that it's a good feel chemical, but how does it even do that? There must be more to dopamine than my current understanding, and so I have pursued a career in it. I try to understand the science behind motivation. And today, I have a recent paper from the Kaiser Lab at Harvard University that was published in the journal Nature a few weeks ago, where the main author is Jintong Cai. The title is Dopamine Dynamics Are Dispensable for Movement but Promote Reward Responses. The canonical brain circuit for value-based decision-making is the dopamine circuit that starts in the ventral tegmental area and releases dopamine in the striatum and the prefrontal cortex. The way we conceptualize this is with action potentials being generated in the cell body of the dopamine neurons in the ventral tegmental area, also the VTA for short, and subsequent dopamine being released from the axon terminals of those neurons, but in a different region, in a different brain region, which is the striatum. However, the firing of the action potentials and the release of dopamine are not as tightly coupled as we once thought. And this paper adds more data to our developing understanding of how dopamine works in the brain. Just to give you a bit of background for today's paper, motivation as a concept is a construct that includes emotion, reinforcement learning, and motor function or movement. Organisms encounter a stimulus that has emotional meaning, emotional salience, and then they act towards that stimulus, and that action involves movement. And indeed, the brain regions for reward and movement are both located in the striatum. The dorsal, or the back facing of the striatum, has the primary role of controlling voluntary movement. And the ventral side of the striatum, which is the belly facing side, it's also known as the nucleus accumbens, is more involved in reward, motivation, and also addiction. And there's also this similarity in the neurons that inhabit these two regions. The neurons are dopamine-receiving medium spiny neurons. What happens to these neurons is a topic for another time. But for today, let's look at this paper where the team used a genetic approach to decouple action potential firing and dopamine release. I would like to state here that the action potential firing is in the dopamine neurons in the ventral tegmental area, and the action potentials travel through the axons all the way to the striatum, where the release of dopamine happens. There are two main techniques that I'll mention for today's paper. The first one is a conditional knockout of a protein. This protein is RIM, R-I-M. RIM is a protein that organizes the release site, and it's important for action potential-induced dopamine release in these neurons. What the research team did is they specifically knocked out the RIM protein in the dopaminergic neurons in the brain, and then they looked at the effect that that knockout has on dopamine release and also associated behaviors. So they looked at the effect of RIM knockout in brain slices and also in live animals. And in the live animals, they looked at behaviors such as movement and value-based decision-making. And in the slices, they tried to show that they were able to decouple action potentials from dopamine release. The second technique worth mentioning in this paper is the fluorescent dopamine receptor, also known as GrabDA. So GrabDA is this genetically engineered receptor that fluoresces or lights up whenever dopamine binds to it. And so this receptor was modified so that whenever dopamine is released, it and binds to its target neurons, the modified receptor will increase in fluorescent signal, and that signal allows us to measure and quantify dopamine release in a living and behaving animal. Of course, this works on brain slices, but what makes it incredible is that it could be used to study dopamine in live and behaving animals. And the way this works is you can package the genetic material for this receptor protein into a modified virus and inject the virus into the brain of an animal. The injection allows you to control the localization of that injected virus. So if you want to inject it into a specific brain region, such as, for example, the nucleus accumbens, you can specifically inject the virus that you need into the nucleus accumbens and have the expression of that fluorescent receptor in the neurons of the nucleus accumbens. You can avoid having this being expressed in the entirety of the brain. And I use the expression injection of a virus here, but I do not want to cause any alarm. The virus does not harm the animals. It's just going to inject its genetic material into the neurons and have them express a receptor protein that fluoresces or shines whenever dopamine is released from those axon terminals and binds to those receptors. And that is the second incredible technique that was used in this study. So after injecting the fluorescence reporter, the GrabDA, into the striatum of the mice, they harvested the brain slices to see if the knockout of RIM attenuates the dopamine release from activation of the dopamine neurons. And that is exactly what they saw. Their setup works beautifully. So they validated their model by electrically stimulating the dopamine axons in brain slices in the striatum brain slices. And then they recorded the fluorescent signal coming from this GrabDA fluorescent receptor. And what they see is that the control mice would have increases in fluorescent signal whenever the striatum is electrically stimulated. However, in the RIM knockout mice, that expected increase in fluorescent signal was attenuated. It was diminished. And that tells us that the electrical stimulation that results in action potentials in the dopaminergic axons in the striatum are not leading to increases in dopamine release. And that's why the GrabDA sensors, the fluorescent receptor sensors that we have, are not picking up that fluorescent signal. So after validating their experiment setup in such a way, they studied motor behavior in the mice. And they specifically looked at the gait of mice that had the RIM knockout. The RIM knockout is in their dopaminergic neurons, and of course. And what they saw is that the gait of these mice was not affected. They move very similarly to the control mice. Their speed is not affected. And by the way, when I say the control mice, these are mice that have an intact RIM protein in their dopaminergic neurons. And the research team looked at different videos and compared any behavioral effect, any movement-related effect that the conditional knockout of RIM might have created in the mice. And there was no significant effect in the movement of the mice from the conditional knockout of RIM in the dopaminergic neurons. And as I said before, the ablation of RIM in the dopaminergic axons clearly impaired action potential induced dopamine release in the striatum. But that decoupling of action potentials and dopamine release do not affect the movement of the mice. And that's what they show us in figure one of this paper. And they follow up that experiment with looking at the changes in dopamine in living and behaving mice. And that's in figure two of the paper. So they use that fluorescent reporter, the GrabDA that I told you about, that shines whenever dopamine binds to it. And then they look at how much dopamine is being released in the striatum in a live and behaving animal. And they see that there's clearly there's a decrease in dopamine dynamics in the striatum in living and behaving mice. So if you look at figure 2C, that's where they show the data. The rim knockout mice had much less fluorescence in their striatum, which tells us that there's less dopamine being released as a result of action potentials. And if you look at it on the left, it says GrabDA, that's the protein that fluoresces whenever dopamine binds to it. And as you can see, the red colored dots that represent the conditional knockout of the rim protein are very low compared to the rim control animals that have an intact rim protein system that allows for action potential induced dopamine release. And as you can clearly tell, there's the difference between the rim conditional knockout and the rim control mice is statistically significant. And in that figure, they also looked at a few other behavior experiments to see if movement initiation is affected by dopamine dynamics in the striatum. Figure one was about overall movement, it was about gait, and it was about speed. And in figure two, we specifically look at the initiation of movement. And overall, what the main result here is that there is movement initiation is also not affected by the conditional knockout of the rim protein in these dopaminergic neurons. And this is really surprising because this ties in a movement disorder, actually a very common movement disorder called Parkinson's disease. And Parkinson's is this neurodegenerative disease where the dopaminergic neurons in the substantia nigra die, and then there is less release of dopamine in the striatum as a result of the degeneration of those dopaminergic neurons in the substantia nigra. And that's what affects motor control and movement initiation in Parkinson's patients. And what we see here is action potential induced dopamine might not be responsible for initiation of movement. And also, of course, overall movement and some of the motor deficits that we observe in Parkinson's patients. And so this makes this result extremely interesting and improves our understanding of how the dopamine system works in the brain, specifically when it comes to movement and initiation of movement. And one of the follow-up experiments that they do is they try to restore some of this dopamine dynamic problem that we see in the striatum by administering levodopa and carbidopa. These two drugs are the standard of care for Parkinson's patients. Levodopa is a substrate for dopamine, and whenever patients take levodopa, it's converted into dopamine in the dopaminergic axons, and the resulting dopamine improves the movement symptoms of Parkinson's patients. However, what we learn from figure 3 of this paper is that levodopa does not improve phasic and fast dopamine dynamics. If you look at figure 3K, so this would be panel K of figure 3, levodopa can improve motor activity that is lost from dopamine depletion. The rim knockout mice that were dopamine depleted by the injection of reserpine will recover their motor activity from L-DOPA treatment. However, levodopa does not recover the fast changes in dopamine that are associated with action potentials. In panel N of the same figure, we see that our fluorescent dopamine receptor does not capture fast dopamine dynamics from the treatment with levodopa. It's important to make the distinction between overall dopamine increase and fast dopamine dynamics. Levodopa, which is the drug, will increase overall dopamine, and we see that because it's already effective in treating Parkinson's. But that overall increase does not transfer to fast and time-locked fluctuations in dopamine. And these fast fluctuations are important for reinforcement learning, which is one of the constructs of motivation. Animals, including humans, use these fast fluctuations in dopamine to make associations between stimuli and responses. The time-locked phasic dopamine release is what allows animals to respond to emotionally salient stimuli. And here, when I say emotionally salient, is to include both appetitive and aversive stimuli. It doesn't matter if a stimulus is rewarding or if it's aversive and sort of punishing. As long as it's emotionally salient, animals will respond to it, and that response is modulated by this time-locked phasic dopamine release. And this takes us from dopamine's role in motor control to its role in learning and motivation. And that's what the paper shows us in figure 4. They're using a behavior setup called conditioned place preference to see if the mice have preference towards a region or a context that they associate, or they're conditioned to associate, I must say, because the research team is conditioning the mice to associate a particular context with food pellets. And what we see here is, if you look at panel A of figure 4, is that they have a day 1 baseline recording. So the mice are allowed to navigate a chamber that has two rooms with a middle sectioning, and a video is taken of their movement and the time that they spent in each region of the chamber. And then for days, they're conditioned to associate one side of the chamber with food pellets, and the other one remains empty. And over time, they're tested if they prefer to stay in one side of the chamber, even during the absence of those food pellets. And the reasoning behind this is, whenever we have motivation-associated behavior, we expect it to have a learning component to it. And we often associate, especially an appetitive stimulus like a food pellet, as something rewarding and necessary for our survival. And in this particular experiment, the mice will associate one side of the chamber as the location for food pellets, and on the day that they're tested for their place preference, they will hang out in that side of the chamber even though there are no food pellets present for that in that particular day. This has been a very classical, I should say, approach to studying learning and conditioning in animals. And what they clearly saw from this experiment is that the rim knockout mice were able to form that place preference similar to the control mice. In panel C of figure 4, we can see that the decoupling of action potentials and dopamine release does not affect conditioned place preference. The most interesting results came for when the mice were tasked to actively learn. So this allowed the researchers to study the vigor of reward-oriented movements. And I use the word vigor because that's what they used in the paper. And the way this task works is by training the mice to poke a lever with their nose, which provided an odor cue that indicates one of the two side ports where water will be delivered. You can look at this setup in figure 4F, and the odor cue signals the smell of the odor cue will signal the mice where to expect a water droplet for consumption. And so using this behavior setup, we can have the mice engage with a specific task, and we can see how action potential induced dopamine is involved in this kind of learning. Both the control and the rim knockout mice were able to learn this task, and there was no difference in their learning. So we can say that action potential induced dopamine might not be essential for this learning component of this task. However, there was a difference in what the research team described as vigor. The rim knockout mice were less engaged in the task. On average, they poked less on the lever, so they initiated fewer trials. On top of that, they took more time to initiate these trials, so their inner trial interval was larger. Even though they were making correct predictions about the location of the water droplet, they took longer to do that task again and repeatedly. And they were also slower in their movement from the source of the odor to the water port. So it took them more time to get the smell, to get the odor cue from the source of the odor, and then to go to the water port and consume their water droplet. From this, we learned that action potential induced dopamine release is not needed for reinforcement learning, but it is involved in fasting, dynamic performance that is oriented towards reward. And this last experiment using odor cues is extended in figure 5 to see how action potential induced dopamine release is involved in anticipatory and predictive behavior. Once the animals made the association between an odorant and the source of water droplet, they'll start to lick the water port even when water is not delivered. And so this predictive licking behavior is similar to the old Pavlov experiment where the dogs salivated just to the ring of the bells even when food is not present. And in the rim knockout mice, this anticipatory behavior was diminished. Their dopamine responses to reward, and especially, and more especially to reward predicting cues such as the odorant, was impaired. And this tells us that action potential induced dopamine release is more important in cue reward association behavior. This is a great paper coming from the Kaiser lab and parsing the role of action potential generated dopamine in movement and reward oriented behavior. And the action potentials in the dopaminergic neurons in the VTA and the subsequent dopamine release in the striatum could be decoupled, and that does not affect movement. And from this paper, we learned that the decoupling impairs the vigor of associative and conditioned learning. That was the Journal Club for today. I'll add links to this paper and also the lab webpage of the Kaiser Lab to the episode notes, so that you can check out the paper directly and also more of their work. And in the next episode of the Journal Club, I will sit with a guest who is also a researcher in the motivation and addiction field. Until next time, ciao.